Whatever you think about survival of the fittest, the philosophers down through the ages pretty well discussed this phenomena as to why they were the aristocracy and why they control things. And they came to the conclusion that they were just naturally, physically, genetically, I suppose, superior. And more cunning. Intelligence to them really is a form of cunningness, an ability, an innate ability to pull the wool over someone's eyes in order to get them to do something which they thought they knew the purpose of, but really was to benefit themselves. It's a form of trickery by clever persuasion, where those who do the gopher work never really realize that that's what they are. Darwin himself, who brought forth the same doctrine, survival of the fittest, which is just an ancient form of Hindu philosophy, really, which is based on a caste system. Again, a caste system of interbreeding of certain family gene pools and keeping the wealth and the structure of power within families. Today, we have sociologists who have written screeds of stuff on different levels. Everything's written on different levels. So you'll get your high school level sociology, where it's not too bad, it tells you basic things about human psychodynamics, group psychodynamics, social psychodynamics, how people work in big groups, but they don't go into the power structure at the top really of these big groups in any detail. On a higher level at some universities, they'll go into that with more, a little bit more honesty as to how it's set up, that there is actually a dominant minority, that Huxley called them, who set forth most of the agenda. But if you get into the really elite schools, the Ivy League type schools, you've got a lot of the offspring of those particular dominant minority families attending, and so they can afford to be more truthful with those students. Margaret Thatcher put it very well when she put public funding towards private schools, the big private schools, because she said that's where the future leaders of this country in politics and economics and the military, etc., will come from. And she was telling the truth. These are basic truths. They get to know each other, they get to know their own generation that they'll be mixing with their whole life. So they make the acquaintances, and one will become a banker or the head of a group of banks, and he'll know the guy who's a general in the military, and he'll know the politician that's the prime minister, and etc. That's how this whole network runs, the old boy network, they call it. And it's in every country. It's no different. It doesn't matter where you go, it's the same structure. In the Soviet system, 200 families basically came in to Russia prior to the revolution and took over. Many of them weren't even Russian. And those same 200 families and their offspring still run Russia today. You'll find the same in China. Ancient families, wealthy families, were not killed off in any revolution. On the contrary, they became often the leaders of the revolution, and they still hold the positions of power to do with internal finance. He who controls the finance controls the country. There's a famous statement made by Rothschild when he took over the Bank of England. He said, give me the power over the money of the country, but here not in terms of this policy, because guy who makes the money for the country is the law of the country. Everybody bows to him. must go to the big bank and get his marching orders, and he must then dictate policy to suit those instructions according to debt and credit. That's how the whole system works. So the big boy controlling the money, just the entire pyramid of a country, is from the bank down, the central bank down. Then obviously everyone is subservient to the guy who controls the bank. The big bankers, the internationalists, can make or break any country if they get two or three of them together. George Soros, who was picked up by the Rothschilds from Europe to create the NGOs that appear to be grassroots organizations which demand policy changes from politicians. But Sir George Soros plays this kind of game on behalf of his masters, and he had a half a page in the, I think it was the Daily Mail in Britain a few years ago, when he and two of his friends, he said, got together and crashed the stock market for Britain. The British government was had to therefore go to the bank to value the pound, borrow him, charge the taxpayer for it, because that's how debt is paid off. The taxpayer and their offspring are put down as basically the collateral to pay off this debt. That's the guarantee. The guarantor are the slaves. The slaves must pay off the debt. Thomas Jefferson, who was a member of the Illuminati and was well understood in his day, he was, told you a truth, because the Illuminati will speak basic truths. It doesn't mean that they will necessarily be on the people's side. They'll just tell you a straightforward truth. And he said a person or a generation born into paying off the debt incurred by a previous generation are therefore slaves. They're not free. And in the modern system, every country under the democratic system is run this way. Every generation must pay off the debt incurred by previous generations. This also guarantees that the same power structure will be in place for as long as that debt is incurred. So the big bankers, the internationalists, are guaranteed to have their great-grandchildren running the system generations from now. It's quite simple. We know that money is made out of thin air, and has been really for an awful long time. That the Bretton Woods Agreement many years ago to do away with the gold standard, not the gold standard, it was really for the bankers' benefit, it wasn't for the public's benefit, because the bankers already owned the gold of the world. They owned the mines where the gold was mined. Cecil Rhodes, who was set up by Rothschild and a few other bankers, was sent off to South Africa to basically grab the wealth of diamonds and gold and silver and minerals for he himself and his masters, who were the bankers. So they'd already owned the gold system, but it took a lot of shipping, and it's not so cost effective to transport huge cargoes of gold between countries for trade purposes. And since these bankers have really been behind the free trade movement and the globalization efforts, stemming back to Britain in the 1500s, you'll find about free trade then, when they had the British Empire. They coined the term to bring in a trading block of countries where they have most favored trading status for nations. So, to move vast cargoes of gold back and forth on a sea that sometimes was pretty rough, and ships would sink, well, the bankers would lose, you see, so much. They always made it up, but they lost so much. So it was easier just to make money out of nothing. And that's when they decided to change the whole system, take it off any standard, for their own benefit. And today, they just print off the money sell debt, they sell debt. It's this oddest thing, they sell debt to people to keep the system going. And people own the debt incurred by your parents and your grandparents, and you, even though you didn't know you were incurring any debt, the politicians, as your job and prime ministers, to sign you down as collateral each time they go cap in hand to banks. And this is what we call civilization and progress. Progress. When we look at this system, there's nothing in it that exists for the ordinary people. Everything is given to the public, including technology. We grab at, we grab thinking, boy, this is fantastic. The computer is fantastic. The internet is fantastic. Even though Zbigniew Brzezinski told us why they were going to give us the computer and the internet long before the public ever heard of it, is to create a common culture, a system where they don't have to send out bodily spies to spy on everybody. They simply have everybody putting all their data through a computer, which the governments, by law, must be able to hack into at any time. That's on with this done. That's over and done with. It's a done deal. Which also means that all the computer manufacturers build in certain techniques, technologies which you're unaware of, to allow this to happen. Which also means that all the security software that you buy, by law, worldwide, must not be able to stop government agencies from coming into them. So they're all in cahoots, by law, by law. People should go and see The Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino. Because in there, Satan or the devil, who doesn't make anybody do anything they don't really want to do, is quite candid with his, it turns out to be his son. And he says, how are we taking over the world? And he's a lawyer. He runs the biggest law firm in New York in this movie. He says, by lawyers, we're turning out armies of them. Lawyers. That's how they're taking the world over. We think it's through battlefields. No, that's just the nitty-gritty stuff for to take over the last remaining, what we call backward nations, the ones that have their own system. But really, the whole world is run by lawyers who understand the meanings of words. And if you go to court, you'll have two of them on a jousting field. That's where justice comes from, joust. Where the knights only could go on the field. If you're a commoner, you're not allowed on it. That's why you stand and you keep quiet. Whereas the authorized knight goes to be your champion, and he hopes to outsmart the other guy with his knowledge of words and previous laws and cases. And you're just a bystander while this is happening. As this little game of intellect goes on between the two jousters. So law is how it's done. Legality. Remember, legality also is related to religion, religio, to bind, to tie. And we're bound and tied by laws, most of which we're unaware of even on the books, or being made, or in the process of being made. But a powerful dominant minority, as Huxley said, has always existed. It's always been here, and as he said at Berkeley, in his speech at Berkeley, I presume it always will exist. He didn't even mention politics. He knew that was more of a sideshow formality for the public. But he did admit to the dominant minority running the whole show, these unseen people behind the scenes. Benjamin Disraeli, who was the Prime Minister of Britain in the 1800s, made the famous statement that those who run government and the country are very, very different from the players that the public see. So the men behind the scenes are unknown generally to the public. And that the high dominant minority group, we call them the lazy boy, the person who works is not one of the dominant minority. The lazy boy does no work, everything is done for them, you see. That's the key of what's called being truly successful. Everything's managed for you. A comment from one of these people could start wars. Because the little aides that run around to hear the little comments will then take on the burden and responsibility legally by implementing, getting rid of someone who's someone's being troublesome. If that ever went to court, that so-and-so was rubbed out because Lord or whatever, Baron so-and-so didn't like this guy, then the Baron is quite free because the aide that mistakenly misunderstood him would take the blame. That's how things run in the real world. Comments make or break nations. Not too long ago on the CBC, there was a documentary about a man living in Canada who dealt heavily with international movements of armaments for wars. Quite legal. It showed you a little brief flash with his Knight of Malta Masonic gear on. Yes, they're all Masons. It doesn't matter if they're orange, blue, whatever lodge they belong to, they're all Masons. And it went from him to a dealing that he'd had with a company in London who was into a big shareholder really in the world supply of gold and silver. And what you find when they went on in this documentary, they interviewed the head, again a worker, remember, a person who works is not the dominant minority, but he's certainly up there, he's above the upper middle class level. And he said, yes, well, we're right now, we've got this little war going in Sierra Leone, and they went through Kinimini, which is a British mercenary service that draws ex-Marines and Special Air Service guys in through, I think, the Isle of Wight. That's where they're based. And they put them all over the world where big private companies, oil companies, diamond companies, want little wars started to clear the people off the land and to get chaos going. And so they showed you some clips in Sierra Leone, and sure enough, there's these ex-British military guys with the black guys they'd hired, having this little war going on there to take over territory, to put into place someone who would be more friendly to this big diamond and gold company. And that's the real world that we live in. There's nothing legally ever done about it because the boys at the top are the legal system, the real legal system. They're untouchable. And we also have this high Masonic tie-in because they're sworn to secrecy. That's the beauty of Freemasonry. Every degree that a person goes through from the bottom to the top, they must retake the oaths of secrecy. And so they get their handshakes, their passwords, their signs, and all this kind of stuff at every degree. But they also must also give a punishment sign that they're also given with every degree. It doesn't stop with a cutting of the throat and all that kind of stuff. It goes on and on and on. So it's a great training ground to recruit workers who will work for this a corrupt system and keep silent about it to death. And it's also reinforced into them that if they were to break the silence, what would happen to them? And grown men, at least physically grown men, don't take these oaths lightly. In the bottom lodges is a big joke. they can't imagine anybody ripping them open and tearing things out them and tossing intestines over their shoulders and all that kind of stuff. They can't imagine it. But those at the very bottom will never be asked to. They go to that extreme anyway. You can't have half-ripped open carcasses all over the planet. That wouldn't look too good for recruitment. And anyway, they know nothing anyway. But they do keep the system going. They're sworn to uphold the system. For those that think that there's an opposition through say, Marxism or Trotskyism, do your homework and look into the histories there. And you'll find, if you read books written by people like Trotsky, he was a high Freemason himself. He was introduced to it in prison at one time. And he was so carried away with it and the role of it in history making that he was writing a compendium of Masonic history when he had to flee from the Soviet system and vamoose into Latin America, where he was supposedly later assassinated. But if you read the book called My Life by Trotsky, he was right through. He was escorted through different countries from the Soviet Union as he was being exiled by the NKVD, the precursors of the KGB. He was escorted through different frontiers by these guys, and he said they all walked through with him, showing no papers, but just giving the Masonic signs and passwords. That's in his own book. So for those people who think it's all a big joke, they should do their homework to find out what's really behind it. They might start as something that seems trivial, almost natural, because many people have generations of lower down Freemasons in their family. And they'll say, my dad was a good guy. Albert Pike said that they're the outer portico lower members. It gives a good public image to think they're involved in charity, which maybe they're not really. But they're sworn to uphold the system. Which is rather odd when you really think about it, because if you ask any average lower Freemason from any type of lodge about the system in its present state, when we know there's so much corruption, at least that's what they give us in the media, and that's what they're going to give us, we don't know the whole extent of it. Even the lowest Mason will tell you, well, if we don't have the system, we'd have anarchy. So they're all taught this at the very bottom level. And I often wonder if anarchy is opposition to something that's rotten and corrupt. What's archy? The ark? Which covenant that we're talking about here? To whom? To what? And yet, these guys that swear to uphold the system are the same guys who boast in their own books. They're the same guys that were behind every revolution, at least as far back as the 1500s in different parts of Europe. So once they put in this system, they then made it really illegal to alter it any way at all. I've had so many people email me and phone me who are caught in different stages of waking up. Some are caught in, well, if we get back to gold, we're fine. Well, that's out the window, because, you know, who would own that? Others think, what can we do to fix it? How can you fix it? And my answer to that is, how can you fix or even want to keep something that's totally corrupt to begin with? How can you say, what part of the corrupt thing do you want to excise? And what, if you excised all the corrupt parts, there's nothing left. Our system is corrupt. We're trained to compete and compete and compete. That's all the sports is about, apart from the brainwashing and the time wasting. The circus is for the public, as Huxley said. But from school, you're taught to do what? To compete, to get little gold stars for being a good parrot. Don't think for yourself, because original thought, especially pre-high school and even during high school, isn't really relished by those in control. They want good parrots. And you learn very quickly that if you get a gold star and the person next to you doesn't, then you're superior to that person there. That's how the system works. So we're graded. Now, Albert Pike made a famous statement too. He said, those masons who haven't gone through the formal degrees, and people can't figure that out, what he means. What he means is, you see, this is a Masonic system. Everything in your system is Masonic, including your grading system at school. They gave us this grading system. The Masons proudly say they were the ones who pushed for the implementation of universal education everywhere. That's what they mean by we haven't gone through the formal rites. However, once you get onto that platform, get the square hat on and all that kind of stuff in your robe, you're starting to take the pre-rites, you see. So we're already trained in a system of grading. And they have their winners and they have their losers. And the losers generally are put into laboring fields. And that's fine as long as you have an industrial society where you need that type of labor, skill labor, and tradesmen and all the rest of it. But in a post-industrial society, you don't need all of those hands anymore. You have the machines that do all the carrying. We see that in the big supermarkets now. Things that they can bring 10 pallets at a time down the aisle. They don't need the labor. And these were jobs at one time were taken by the unskilled, the ones who failed the exams or had no interest. Perhaps more wisely than others who did try to pass it, because maybe subconsciously they knew most of it was nonsense. Especially when you get gold stars for just learning dates and times and who killed who and that kind of stuff. Stuff written by propagandists. As Lenin said, the victor writes the rules and writes the history. In reality, it's all been the same bunch, regardless of what side you thought they were on. So, the mass man, they understand. Mass psychology is well understood what motivates the masses, because there's a tremendous peer pressure amongst people to conform to the people next door to you. In ancient times, the priesthoods knew that they'd have to dissolve tribes, and once a tribe was out of the way, you could then rule over people directly down to the individual. However, they needed a breeding program for slaves and workers, and so they gave us marriage. The Catholic Church instituted marriage for life, and your wife was often picked for you when you were 14, 15. And when the priest made a suggestion, you should marry Maggie over yonder, that was an order. So they kept the births, the marriages, the deaths of everybody, and they knew what's a good stock for one kind of work and a bad stock for another. They understood it's a breeding program. That's why you keep all these records going back for generations of who's marrying who and who gives offspring to whom. And then the Catholic Church could rule directly through the individual. The tribal cohesion was gone. There was nobody to stand up for you. On the contrary, you'd have to go to the local priest sometimes to stand up for you to the guy above the priest. In this new post-industrial society, we see the effects of the dissolvement of that which was useful at one point to the elite. Now they don't need it anymore, because even a family is still a form of a mini tribe. People will stand up for each other and their rights for family members. If you destroy the family unit, completely eradicate it, then you've accomplished your mission. Now it's the state's right to you. In a totalitarian regime, the state have said over and over, and the philosophers have all spoken about it, it's taught at high levels, the state must reign supreme in every area of a person's life. The state only must be the only ones authorized and allowed to use force. That's why no one else can use any force, even to protect yourself against a bear or whatever. This is taught in the officers' training colleges for the military. It's also taught in the training colleges for the military and the police. That ultimately, to have a safe society, you must have a predictable society, which means complete data collection on every individual at all times. If someone gets drunk and drives a car and kills someone on the coast or thousands of miles away, why would a law be passed on the books so that every motorist must get stopped and give breathalyzers or have some policeman with his nose two inches from yours to see if you've been drinking? Well, that was all tested out in the Soviet system, which is now implemented here. In the Soviet system, they had communal punishment. So if one person broke a law which someone else could break, then the whole society had to be regarded as possible suspects before the event occurred. In other words, we're all capable of crimes. How do you stop crime? You got to stop free thought. How do you stop free thought? Well, ultimately, you've got to either destroy that part of the brain that makes you an individual and gives you the ability to choose, or you do it by implanting them with something. Both of these methods have been heavily discussed. The former has actually been practiced to an extent through the introduction of drugs and inoculations. And if you follow the IQs, the new IQ, by the way, is quite a few points lower than the last IQ. It was released a few months ago. And we're supposed to think this is a normal thing, that we just dropped 10 points on the IQ level. As though if you started getting shorter, losing 6 inches in a generation, that would be normal too. This is how we're given this kind of data. But then when you read Arthur Koestler's book, The Ghost in the Machine, where he works for the United Nations, he sits on think tanks to find ways of lobotomizing chemically or bacteriologically or virally parts of the brain to destroy individualism for world peace, mind you. And the only problem was, do we inject it into them, do we put it in their water, their food, or spray it from the air? Well, take your pick. The bad news is this has been going on. You don't employ thousands of people in what is a world government. That's what the United Nations is set up to be. It's not there to be a social worker that hands out bread. That's the television PR stuff. Read the books written just prior to the setup of the UN, the ones written during the 1940s to do with the United Nations and its functions and its goals and missions, and then you'll clue in to what the UN really is. It was set up to be world government, step by step. Every country which signed on to it technically gave up its sovereignty. And if you break that rule that you've signed, they call you a rogue nation. That means you've broken the contract. So it's not just a referee between people or nations. it's ultimately the final arbiter is the king system for globalization. And to bring peace, they're always talking about, they'd have to either lobotomize you or put a chip in your brain. And the chipping part was discussed at the meetings at Loyola University when the scientists from all countries met for the international meeting on this very topic. And we see it now promoted in movies. As I said at that meeting, they would do. They promote this idea into the public's minds of an inevitability of chipping down the road by putting in comics, cartoons, novels, and now we have them. You can read some, watch them, like the cutter, you know, the final cut. And children get it in their cartoons where the superheroes are part robot and they have chips in them and they have all these super strengths and abilities, and the youngsters think that, gee, that would be great to have something like that. But the real objective is to make a form of the Borg. We were all one. We'll all be one, linked to the central computer. So have a number. And when you become faulty, they'll just call you in for readjustment, or elimination, or recycling, perhaps. This is the real world we live in. We pay through taxation for all these think tanks to find ways of controlling us more and more and more. And they know how to do it, they have the technology to do it, and we still think, because of the optimism part of the brain, which is well understood, we all have a little part called the optimist part, that nobody would do that. Nobody would do that because I wouldn't do that to them. And that's why these things are allowed to happen. I used to wonder when I was first shown around a farm by a schoolmate of mine. And he took me around the calves that were in stalls. And he said, pat them. And they drool these big eyes at you. And he said, stick your hand in their mouth. And he stuck your hand in their mouth. And he'd suck away there and slobber away. And these were really nice things, you see, creatures. And what I could never fathom is why farmers could talk affectionately about animals which they were going to eat or sell for profit that would be eaten. It's a dilemma for some of us. Until you take that same personality type, boost it up into a dominant minority role where you're given a completely different meaning of life and the universe and the way things run. And they talk about us the same way. They don't say that they hate the public or nasty things. In fact, they talk in a very nice manner about it all. So nice, like Aldous Huxley, that you've got to really think about what he's saying for it to hit home that this person is saying such horrible things in the nicest possible way. Because the good shepherds in all ages must cull the sheep, you see, eventually, once in a while. That's what they're there for. In the next million years, by Charles Galton Darwin, his biggest fear was the threat that the commoners, who were breeding out of control, according to him, would become so numerous they'd dilute the gene pool, and eventually some of the more elite classes might join them and interbreed and lose their special genes and become dumb and stupid and watch soccer and stuff like that. So he was all worried about keeping them separate and culling off the lower ones or sterilizing them compulsorily. So we tied all this in with all the agendas that are on the go, all meshing with each other, and Joe Average would think by reading papers and magazines that they're all disconnected and just happenstance and it's just the way things go. But nothing is further from the truth. Everything in culture, creation, is planned and allowed or disallowed. Nothing can happen in a system that might upset the system. Nothing that hasn't been discussed and argued about in panels, and the pros and cons of repercussions down the road. Plato went into this stuff over 2,300 years ago. Well understood these sciences. The New Age movement is part of it. You bring them in gradually through fascinating them with the unknown. The unknown is a fascinating thing. We all have this little bit of what makes things tick, what's behind the things we see. Why do things happen the way they do when they shouldn't happen or should happen or whatever? And forces, the God of forces is another little term where they'll couch it. So we are watching the creation, and we're lived through it actually, of the creation of a new religion for a new era called the New Age. And this New Age has spokesmen like Mikhail Gorbachev, amongst many others that all intermesh in his Green Party, or his little green Lazarus flag there, Knights of Lazarus, writing about the creation of the New Age movement, where a form of earth worship must be introduced into the minds of people. And the day will come when children will voluntarily step forward to be sterilized for Mother Earth. And you better believe only certain lower orders who will take part in this, because the elite don't have to. They're special genes. They've proven their worth. They can dominate, and they're too cunning. But they don't need all of the hands anymore for their new pristine planet that they want to create, with their habitat regions and animal corridors and armies of forestry guys, but they're really another, just another uniformed army. Uniform, one form, Masonic again. All uniforms are. Then others want to know, well, what happens after this? Many people actually ask you that question before they want to know, or they ask the questions about what's happening now. They'll say, what happens after this? And these are the religious shoppers. They look for the supermarket of religion. They've generally paid who knows how many bucks, going from one guru or special meditation thing to the next, to the next, to the next. They speak a language that they think is theirs. It's not. It was given to them. They've built their own terminology. And they never admit that they're going on to the next school of thought, because the last one didn't work. If it did work, they wouldn't leave it, obviously. They'd be happy. But they just chop one to the next because they're terrified of what happens after this. They don't even know what's happening here now. And here they are worrying about what's going to happen after this. And the oddest thing is, in human nature, regardless of religion or time or era, the oddest thing is that people think they're entitled to go on to something better. It's a beautiful creation of, or escape for those who don't use their minds in this world. Somehow they don't really deserve to go on. It's almost like an obligatory thing on behalf of some godhead to pass them through the pearly gates, regardless of what they have or haven't done. Like a legality that they've been signed before they were born or something by a deity, ensuring them that this guarantee, an insurance company of heaven, you might say. Yet they haven't done anything in this life. They don't even know what's happening. They don't even know that the religions they're involved in were all made for them by people they never see, not by the Lord Gurus or whatever they see in front of them. I was recently sent a cutout from a magazine with an advertisement for some Buddhist guru, Rinpoche or something. Maybe they come back and back as a ricochet, eh? But anyway, this guy was appearing at some big place in the US, some place in New York, and the little mats on the floor, and if you count them all up, there's an interesting number. You should look into it. You can find this ad if you want. And you've seen after that, it looks like the chessboard, of course, but there's an actual floor further on towards this rounded part of this New Age hall that is the chessboard. And you find that in every Masonic lodge. And then they have the double tetrahedron, the top one, and the bottom one, the diamond shape. That's the twin pyramids above and below. And it's in blue, and then there's a 6 on it, which is also the letter G for generation, gnosis, grafting, all that kind of stuff, geometry, God, and gold, because you're gold when you've achieved godhood. Golden Pythagoras. So it's all Masonic, and this is supposedly Buddhist. And you'll find this in all religions, the same symbolism, and it's in front of your face all the time. And people never question what it means. And for them to even think, or come close to thinking, that all this is connected, all of these religions are connected somehow at the top, well, it must be absurd, didn't it? So, well, why is it absurd? Well, it's always been there. Like that validated its sincerity and honesty and independence. So people go religion hopping in this great supermarket. They're finding satisfaction in a world which they can't understand. Looking for a guarantee into something to come. They can't handle the burden of consciousness in this world, because it's not a pleasant place, and it's not meant to be, the way the system's set up. We don't have the luxury of just being totally joyful, because we're always worried about the past or the future, and that the symbolism of Jesus with the two robbers on either side, the thieves, one who stole the past, one who steals the future, the worry of regret for the past, the fear for the future, Freemasonry. Yet they want to go on, or have a guarantee that some big important person wearing a fancy clothes, maybe waving incense, or splashing them with holy water, or ducking them under water like apples you do at Halloween, is going to guarantee you a rite of passage into an afterlife where all will be happy and you don't have to cry anymore. That's what we've been fed for thousands upon thousands, maybe millions of years. To keep us all quiet while nasty things are happening around us. Every generation goes through this. We live in a world of symbols. The reincarnation theory is really for the elite at the top. They have a different version, which I've talked about before. But they don't mind the lessers, the ones down below, believing in it, and it keeps them happy and quiet. And it's almost like a credit card thing where you can sin now and you pay later. A karmic thing. Just add it to my tab, and I'll work it off in my next lifetime. This is the nonsense with which the elite, an elite, a scientific elite, by the way, control us with all of this stuff. And the story is generally, don't worry about anything, just let things happen. It's unreal, it's all an illusion, and it doesn't matter what happens to anybody, which mustn't mean ourselves as well. Or maybe it's always to other people. Maybe that's how we can rationalize it. when people are paid to go off and kill all over the planet and be rewarded for it by governments and things, and given little medals to wear for killing people. The world really is a nasty place. It's a cruel place. But running on a particular inner secret religion. You might call it the modern term, social Darwinism, survival of the fittest. Or you might go back into the past and realize that Darwin just reiterated what the elite had always believed in. And he did. It's their religion. It's part of it. So here's some food for thought. You have to do your homework. Don't ask me. As though I were a personal library to do all your work for you. Don't ask me the answers and the meaning of life to everything. You'll have to go off and find that for yourself. For yourself. And taking a ready-made suit off the shelf isn't going to do it for you. I'll just take this one or that one. They're all made for you in advance by the same voice at the top. To have meaning in life, you have to be a sentient being. And stop allowing others to do your thinking and entertaining and passing your time for you on this planet. Think for yourself. You might be surprised. Well, it's just to let you know that these are basics that I'm giving you, basics and repetition. It's important. Repetition is important till you start to look into these things I've been talking about. Rather than going into the deep, deep, deep stuff, this is deep enough if you go into some of the books I've recommended in the past. In the next video I'll be doing, I'll go into an esoteric side of things in a lot more detail than has been done up to the present time. This next one will be for sale, and I hope you'll support me by buying it. So stay tuned to the website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and hopefully it'll be up and out soon. Thank you.
Must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well their father's hell. It slowly go by, and feed them on your dream. The one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would try. So just look at them and sigh. Your elders grew high, and so please help them with yours. They see the truth before they can die.
Teach your parents well, their children's health will slowly go by, and be gem on your dream. The one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why. If they told you, you would cry. So just look at them and sigh.